How do you know if you're worrying too much? How can you mend a broken heart? Does peaking at school ruin you for life? I'm Susie Ruffle, a stand-up comedian and someone who has always experienced anxiety. And I've written a book, Am I Having Fun Now? Considering some of life's big questions. Featuring bonus insights from the likes of Charlene Douglas, Sarah Pascoe, Elizabeth Day and Dolly Alderton. Am I Having Fun Now? Is out now in hardback, ebook and audio.
Hello and welcome to Like-Minded Friends with me, Tom Allen.
And me, Susie Ruffle.
Now, we thought it would be unusual. Now, we thought it would be impossible for us to do this podcast this week without talking about what happened in Florida in Orlando at the weekend just gone. And I think for many of our listeners will know that we are a queer-centric, is that the right word?
Quentric,
yeah, that's it. Podcast, and so it seemed important. It feels important that we sort of talk about what happened there and some of the things that have happened since then, and in the fallout from the shootings in the Pulse nightclub in Orlando. Susie, how did you feel when you heard about it?
I was immediately quite upset. I was in a cafe in Brighton.
Well, it's sort of a bit of an obvious question. Odd question, isn't it? Somebody asked me this morning.
How did you feel? Yeah.
How do you feel?
Upset. Yeah. I especially connect to it, obviously, because I'm gay, and it feels like someone coming in on our turf, where sort of our people are, our community is.
Right.
And, you know, the idea of just, you know, one minute people are having, you know, a great night out.
Yeah.
You know, like so many that I've had.
Yeah.
And the next minute, you know, these people have nothing to do with politics. They've got no agenda.
Yeah.
They were just going out and having a night out with friends.
It seems all the more harrowing, doesn't it, when it's people relaxing in their...
Yeah.
In their relaxation time, in their leisure time, in their personal time, to be attacked. It seems all the more harrowing because of that, I feel.
And I think that one thing that sort of struck me initially and since, people sort of wondering whether, oh, is this a homophobic attack? Well, is it just, you know, it's just Islamic extremism. It could have been any bar. And I think that really dilutes what happened if we're saying it could have just been any bar, because it wasn't just any bar. There was a choice that it was a gay bar. And I think that, you know, I know a lot of our listeners are gay or, you know, define themselves somewhere on that spectrum. But, you know, I'm sure we have straight listeners too. And I think there's a real connection with gay bars. So I remember very clearly sort of the first time that I went in one, I had that feeling of being like, oh, thank God, I'm not a weirdo. There's loads of other people that are like me. And I think that sort of, I don't know, I guess for some, our gay bars are like, I don't want to say like churches, because obviously they're not, but they're places that we go in a group, en masse, to be together.
I think we've talked as well on here as well about, well, it's often lamented the decline of a lot of gay bars and clubs, and are they as important, you know, in this internet age in terms of meeting other gay people? And I think in terms of kind of that community aspect of them, whether or not they always are that community place. Mm. I think they bring together the community. Do you know what I mean?
That's
still the place
right.
where people gravitate towards. Because I think, well, I always felt as a gay person growing up, like there was nowhere. Like when I grew up in Bromley, there was nowhere I felt comfortable. I just thought, God, I'm just going to get beaten up, I think, if I go here. If I go, you know, if I go out in Bromley High Street. Whereas going uptown, going to London, where they had the gay bars and clubs, always felt much more exciting and so much more inclusive.
I remember the first time I went into the Royal Vauxhall Tavern, which some of our listeners might not know. It's this really sort of iconic cabaret.
Well, it's apparently where Freddie Mercury used to dress up Princess Diana as a man.
As a boy, yeah.
Take her in there so she could have a night out.
I mean, I don't care if that's true or not. I believe that.
I think if you want it to be true, then you have to believe it.
Yeah.
It's very iconic, isn't it? Yeah.
And sort of just going in there and it being full of sort of... you know, misfit sounds like it's a negative word, but it's not, because it's exactly how I saw myself. Just people that were out, slightly outside of society.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? Like, I don't mean that in a negative way at all. I mean, I was like, oh, great. There's people that are a bit different like me, you know, boys that were really camp or really flamboyant, girls that were sort of, you know, dressing in sort of like a slightly masculine way, or drag queens, or girly gay girls, just a real mix of all sorts of people.
Yeah, it can be a bit like that there. Yeah, particularly on a sort of Saturday, if you go to Ducky or one of the nights there. They're a bit more sort of alternative than a lot of the gay scene. Yeah, they're very, it's a very inclusive club, but I think it's a kind of a really great example of somewhere, like you say, of that really represents what a gay club is to people. It's a safe space, and it's a place where people can be themselves. So I think it was all, you know, it was that, I suppose, contributes to how we feel about that experience, or that the happenings on Saturday night. And I think reading about the stories of people who were there has just been so devastating, just to read.
So sad.
Horrific, like the text messages that the boy sent his mom, and just think, it's, you know, it's just unbearable, unthinkable, the experience that those people went through. And reading about some of the survivors and what they said, and there was a man who was interviewed about how he was shot in the leg.
Yeah, I saw that as well.
Oh, it was just so
terrifying.
Yeah, I can't imagine what that would be like.
Oh, utterly terrifying. And people were saying that, you know, to begin with, they didn't realise that there were gunshots, because there was sort of loud music, and there's lots of different music in different rooms, and different music happening, and people didn't really realise, and just the fear of it must have just been, outrageous. And I don't know, it's sort of, I wonder now if that's going to sort of, is there going to be more fear in our community? Is there going to be more fear at Pride? Or can you even, my dad very sweetly rang me up and said, you know, he said, oh, it's so sad about America, isn't it? I said, yeah, Dad, you know, it's you know, obviously it's really upset me, and it's really, you know, I sort of can't really stop reading about it. And he said, yeah, I know that you go to gay bars and stuff, and I know that you're not going to stop going, but please try and be careful. And you sort of go, well, I don't really know how to do that.
Yeah, of course, though. But yeah, people will sort of, I think, feel a bit like that. I don't know what the answer is to that. Something like that really is. It's, I mean, of course, everybody wants to be safe. But I think... I think it's very interesting. We were saying a bit before we started doing the show about how some people will say, oh, homophobia doesn't exist, or, you know, we don't need to worry about homophobia. And a lot of the time, I guess that's true. We don't. And we're, you know, it's fabulous that we live in an age when people are much more accepting. But at the same time, there are still people who aren't. And it's an interesting... Homophobia is a very interesting issue, I think.
I don't understand how anyone could ever have that much interest in what two people do by themselves with that has nothing to do with you. I guess it is a scary time to some degree, you know, sort of what's happening in Russia, and some of the sort of Republican candidates in America have been very anti-gay.
Yeah.
And, you know, our own equalities minister didn't originally vote for equal marriage. So I guess, you know, we are living in a world where we have to be aware that not everyone is sort of this liberal, lefty, Guardian reading.
Yes, that's certainly true, But I think it must be very difficult as well. What were you going to say?
No, so I was going to say that we live in sort of an arty world. We live, you know, we're surrounded by comedians and actors and writers, and that's sort of a lot of our friendship group.
Yeah, it's easy to take that for granted, isn't it? Yeah. I think that as well, it must... It's just sort of... Well, there are lots of great role models out there, and there are... lots of very positive voices being heard, but at the same time, there are other people who aren't like that, and I think it's easy to forget that actually in smaller places or in different communities it's not as easy. And I know we have like people who listen to this who are not out yet, and
some of our darling like-minded friends that have got in touch with us and tune in, but they're not out yet. And I sort of wondered that myself. I thought, oh, I wonder how this would have made me feel if I was sort of 15, living in Portsmouth, not yet out.
Yeah. Well, I remember feeling it when I remember the nail bombing in
The Admiral Dunkel
in Soho, and I was a teenager at that point. But I remember feeling like, oh, you know, it's sort of not as... Oh, it's... Well, I sort of knew it wasn't easy anyway being gay, but I thought, oh gosh, that's kind of, even on a sort of subliminal level, you sort of go, oh, it's not easy, it's not like there's a threat to you.
Yes.
And I think that...
Well, I think that was the thing when I first came out. My mum and dad didn't really care about the fact that I was attracted to women. That didn't really come into it. Mum just thought, oh, you're going to have a harder life now.
Yeah, I think that's often the reaction of a lot of parents, isn't it? And I think that's why they sometimes say, like, oh, I would prefer, you know, they're like, oh, of course, I don't want my children to be gay.
Yeah.
I think that's largely what they're saying, I think.
I hope so. Yeah. Maybe we want to think that, so that's what we think.
Yeah, maybe. But yeah, I don't know, but it's, but I think, yeah, it's sort of those subliminal messages, isn't it? Of like, it's not okay. And I don't really know. It's interesting to...
But I think the outpouring of grief that's happened since has said it is okay. Do you know what I mean? Like, I think obviously there will always be people that say, you know, there will not necessarily always,
yeah,
but for the foreseeable future, there will be people that don't like it on religious grounds or many
There's
other
always
reasons.
Challenges, yeah.
Yeah. But I think I went to the vigil on Monday night.
Oh yes, yeah.
In Old Compton Street, and there were thousands of us. there were thousands of us there, and it was there were straight couples and gay couples and trans people, and there were Muslim people, and there were, you know, just so many people from so many different walks of life that didn't necessarily identify as gay and didn't have, you know, maybe the community, the feeling of sort of our community being shocked to the core, or our, you know, being the fact that something had happened to us, or what feels like us. I don't know if that's saying, like, I'm not trying to, that makes it sound like I'm making it about me, but it feels like when something happens to your community, you feel like, oh, this could have been me, or it could have been, do you know what I mean? It felt like there was a real, I don't know, there was a great atmosphere of people being there and standing up and being there together and doing sort of the minute silence.
Right, yeah.
But part of me was like, oh, I don't know if it needs to be a silence. I don't know whether it should be like a scream of rage, being like, is silence really submissive to be like, oh, well, I'll be quiet now. I know it's to remember.
Yeah.
But I mean, it was very moving, and there were lots of people there, and there were lots of tears, and, you know, and I couldn't stay late. I had a show to get to, but apparently sort of later on in the night, it sort of became more of sort of a street party.
Oh,
type
right.
vibe where people like dancing in the street and but I think it was sort of a nice thing to go and to be part of, and to, I don't know, I really felt that sense of, you know, yes, there are people that are the people that don't like what we are or what we represent, but there's a real outpouring of people going, no, we're here, we're part of this as well.
Yeah, and I think that's I think that's very, it's important for, you know, countering that message of negativity, I think. I think that's one of the things, it's not easy, but often, I think with a lot of gay young people, there's a lot of negative things to zone in on.
Oh, of course, actually, yeah, like, definitely.
There's loads of positives and loads of sort of nice people out there, great people who are really supportive, positive people who do form a community, and it's sometimes a community that's quite interesting and is quite diverse and is often effective and often, well, sometimes not. And I think it's important just to kind of go, well, you know, it's not all bad news. And I think it's a sad thing to think. I mean, when I was growing up, it felt like there were a lot of negative messages and a lot of negative things to concentrate in. Like, even if there was something about, like, gay people, it would usually be in the shadow of AIDS.
Yes.
And so there was always a sort of, oh, like, well, you know, you might be happy in yourself, but you're gonna have this terrible disease probably. And it was never like, you could never just be like, well, can't we just, you know, just be just sort of happy. And so I think
it's
a lot
whole,
to counter that since, but yeah.
Yeah, well, sorry, I was just agreeing. I think that's sort of part of where the whole sort of, I guess, you know, because you and I have sort of discussed in the past a little bit on the podcast, but more over copious amounts of wine about, you know, what pride means now. You know, pride is sort of pride season at the moment. There's pride marches and parades happening all over the country, and of course in America as well, and different parts of the world. And, you know, it's got to a stage where it was sort of a political rally, and now it's, and now there's sort of floats and things and people dancing. But I guess, I don't know, the older that I'm getting and the more that I'm sort of, I don't know, becoming more aware of how you can have a voice. I guess, you know, people being on podiums and dancing and being like, this is who I am.
Yeah.
And this is, you know, I guess that can be a political act as much as marching and holding a sign.
Yeah, I know some people don't like going to Pride and stuff, and I think that's completely valid too. I think in any way it's about being who you want to be and not being afraid of that. So whatever you want to be, whether it's you want to stay at home and just bake cakes,
yeah,
and that nobody can come along and be like, "What are you doing baking cakes? Go on, get out there and play football." Like, we don't all have to be homogenous.
Yeah, we don't have to all be the same kind of gays.
Or you know, just I was sort of thinking of assimilating with straight people.
Or the same.
But yeah.
I know what you mean. It's interesting, isn't it? It's because, you know, there's sort of different levels of homophobia and different types. You know, like people saying like, I've got male friends that are gay, and people have said, "Oh, well, you know, at least you're not sort of like a screaming queen."
Oh yes, I've heard people say that. Really,
and it's so offensive to be like, "Oh, well, you're a one that me as a straight person is willing to accept."
Yeah,
and you go, "Oh no, you can't say that, because that screaming queen is closer to me than you will ever be, because we're both in this."
Well, yeah, I think.
Or like being a butch gay girl.
Oh, right.
You know, it's very cool now to be sort of, you know, and I appreciate I'm sort of a long haired les, but, you know, it's very sort of cool to be sort of, you know, a girly gay girl now, and the sort of lipstick lesbians are a thing. But, you know, there's a lot of, you know, butch gay women that I'm sure still find it very difficult to.
Yeah, if you're presenting something that's not. It's not acceptable to the mainstream. It's not sort of amenable to the mainstream.
Well, not sexy. And I don't mean that in a way of like, because obviously there are a lot of people that find very butch women hugely sexy. That's not what I mean. But I mean to sort of.
In terms of the parameters of set by.
Set by other people.
Yeah.
Or set by the straight world.
Yeah.
Like,
absolutely.
Like, girls need to look like that, boys need to look like that.
Yes, that's very true. Yeah, I think it's there's still lots of people struggling very much. And I think. I don't know that much about America. I've been there lots of times, several times.
Did you go into any gay bars? What was the vibe like?
Yes. I mean, the thing about America is it's so big that it's so different whichever bit you go to. And I know we have American listeners. It is so vast. And I think that maybe is one of the things that characterizes America as well, is the feeling of just such a huge expanse of place and people. But one of the most joyful things that I did, and it was shortly after I came out, was my friend Charlie and I went to San Francisco when I was about 22. And it was the most joyful thing to do, because we arrived there on the day of Folsom Street Fair, which, for listeners who are au fait with these things, will know that Folsom is actually like the leather and bear, I want to get this right, leather and fetish communities street party on Folsom Street in San Francisco. And it was such a wonderful way to arrive and just see people just being themselves and just being like totally at ease. And these really terrifying looking guys in their leather and sort of massive muscles, and just would look quite intimidating. And then you'd see them see their friend and they'd be like, "Oh my God, hi, how are you?" and it just felt like really just sort of great and really kind of accepting in a way that I'd never seen before. Just really like people just getting on with their lives and people just having a great
time. It's that great thing as well, as when you're abroad, you can sort of not be looking over your shoulder to see anyone seeing how you react.
It did feel like that, actually. And that was probably, you know, like one of my happiest kind of experiences of being in a gay community.
Mm.
And I think it's those sorts of times. I think as a teenager, I always felt like, "Oh, I'm gay, but I don't want to be like all the gays on the television." And I think there's sometimes that.
Who were the gays on the television?
Well, hardly any, really. Yeah. But like all the gays you'd see in books and stuff, and I'd be like, I'm not like that. I mean, I'm gay, but I'm not like that. I'm special, I'm different. And then when I went to San Francisco at the time, I was like, "Oh, all right, well, I could be part of this, I suppose. I could be part of this." And I think it's just about finding an identity on your own terms, really. So I think it's one of the things that I feel is so important and to be celebrated, and is those sorts of times when you just feel really relaxed and really centered and really like, oh, and it can be on a small level or a big level, but it just sort of, it's just important, I think, to have at least a few experiences of that in your life when you go, oh, it's nice to be around other people. Oh, I'd quite like an aspiration as well to be like, oh, I'd like to be like these people.
Oh yeah, 100%.
Yeah.
I remember seeing sort of groups of gay women that were all friends when I was, you know, when I first came out, I didn't know any other lesbians.
Of course not. In Portsmouth.
For God's sake,
for God's sake.
And seeing like these groups of girls who were all sort of a bit cool and a bit and having fun and all, you know, in clubs and being like, oh God, I hope that one day I have a friendship group like that. That would be really nice. And now, of course, I do. And
but
it was something that I aspired to. It wasn't just something that sort of go, oh, I'm gay. Oh, here are all my friends.
Yes, that's true.
But you do have
it?
To sort of put yourself out into that world.
Yeah, yeah. And I think it's, to go back to Orlando, obviously the sort of, again, it's that sort of feeling of an attack on those kind of places and that time and that those sort of experiences of people just being together and having fun that I find very painful to think of. And I think it's intriguing that some of the reports come out about the man who did it, how he would go to the bar.
Yeah.
And how people were aware of him. There was one man who was saying like, oh, yes, we always saw him. And it made sense. It like totally made sense to him when he realized what had happened. And I don't know if you saw, did you see that interview?
No, I didn't. So what did he, sorry, tell me
he'd
more
been
about
there
that.
And it was like,
I saw that he'd been there and
hanging
he was
out
on...
at the bar and he would talk to people and people would be like, that guy's a bit odd. I don't think you should talk to him.
Right.
And it's on the BBC website, I saw it. And,
but he was also sort of on Grindr and
I think so. He'd
some,
spoken
some of the
to
other male.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so there was one guy that said he'd asked him out for a drink and said no. And then he'd reacted quite badly to that.
Oh, really?
Mm.
Yeah. It's sort of, so people have sort of suggested it's this internalized homophobia thing, which I think again is very interesting and doesn't often get explored. And like you kind of go, well, what is going through somebody's mind?
Yeah, of course.
Like, and often maybe at the root of homophobia is that sort of sense of like being dissatisfied or very unhappy with yourself.
Well, that's, yeah, I've always sort of found that because as I said before, I don't really know how what somebody else does in the privacy of their bedroom has anything to do with...
Yeah, well, maybe it is to do with oneself, you know, and maybe it's not... Who knows? I think it's something that's often more complicated than is ever talked about, perhaps. But I think one of the things that I've seen people saying is that it's to do with his own internalised homophobia.
And I imagine that's very hard if you're someone that is religious or has grown up with religion. Because
a lot of the time, if you're getting those negative messages,
Because it must be... enormously hard. But then everyone from the head of, you know, I'm not a religious person, but, you know, everyone from every faith in America has come forward and said, our religion is about love. You know, whether it's Islam or whether it's Christianity or Judaism or Hinduism, whatever it is.
Yeah.
And it's so interesting that I do think that is occasionally something that people who are both Christian or, not Christian, both religious and gay.
Yeah.
It must be something that you really have to wrestle with.
Which I think potentially, Well, I think as well, if you feel like you're at odds with the people around you, I think that's why role models are so important and visual.
Yes, definitely.
People to look up to and aspire to are so important because it means that you don't feel like you're totally at odds with the world around you, which perhaps, I don't know, I think it's easy to feel as a young person if you're not aware of other gay people and you don't come from a family that's very open or very chatty about that sort of thing, then I think it's difficult.
And I think it's so easy as... I was about to say young person, but it's not. It's someone that is maybe not out, or someone that is out, but...
Yeah, plenty of people come out when they're older, don't they?
Yeah, or someone that is out, but is not in a world that is very gay or that has much of a gay community. It's so easy to feel alone.
Yeah.
You know, I know that for years I sort of sought comfort in Sarah Walter's books.
Of course.
Because there were these... You know, I could sort of read that in the privacy of my bedroom and no one needed to know. And it was, you know, and they were sort of my friends that lived in books, which I know sort of sounds a bit...
Tragic. It sounds tragic.
I knew you'd say something, but I think that that's...
Yeah, no.
I think you had a similar thing with Tales of the City. Don't tell me you
did. Yes, I did. All right. I'll say it. Yes,
but I think that's a very normal thing to sort of feel... To occasionally feel sort of a bit alone if you are someone that doesn't sort of fit into that sort of straight, normative, cisgendered world.
Mm. Yes, yeah. Sorry, just taking a sip of water. Because my throat is a little bit dry.
I think the listeners can probably tell we're both a bit deep today on the voice front.
Hay fever is
it's terrible.
A real pain in the arse. But and I think that's what Krishnan Gurumurthy... tweeted a really interesting thing. He said, pray if you want to. I think I'm paraphrasing, but he said something along the lines of like...
Oh, God, Tom.
Oh, God. Sorry.
Did your water go down the wrong hole?
No, it didn't really scratch the itch as I thought it would.
Okay.
I'm sniffing. It's not very nice, is it? Sorry. We'll start again. Krishnan Gurumurthy tweeted a very interesting thing on Sunday, I thought, where he said, and I'm paraphrasing, but he said something along the lines of, you can pray if you want to, but I think the most important thing here is that we fight bigotry and we teach our children about homophobia and hate and about the dangers of gun crime and gun control and
oh my God.
The importance of gun control and yeah, and sort of that action.
Yeah, I mean, that's something we've not even, we're coming to the end of the podcast, but that's something we've not even mentioned, the fact that, you know, it's the gun control thing in America is just crazy. There was a really, yeah. I saw a really, now I can't credit anyone with it, so I'm very sorry for that, but there was a great, someone put out a really great sort of longer than a tweet, I don't know, it was sort of, but they just said if a man who wanted to go and buy a gun had to go through the same protocol as a woman who wants to have an abortion.
Oh, yes, I saw that, yeah.
Go to see two or three doctors, see a psychiatrist, wait 24 hours, wait 48 hours, and then be shown pictures of victims of gun crime.
Yeah.
And then if you still want a gun after all of that.
Yeah.
Like, I'm sure a lot of people still would, but...
Yeah, I mean, you can drive a car. You have to go through so much to drive a car.
Yeah.
I mean, they are dangerous, obviously. But,
Well, I mean, yeah, you can... You know, you in America, like, I think you can. I think it's the same age that you can legally have sex and buy a gun.
Really?
Yeah, 21. Big day.
Differs between states.
But yes, yeah. I think it probably does.
Yeah, but potentially a very big day. But yeah, and it's very. I'm happy to say it seems very different to what we experience in the UK.
Yes.
With regard to gun ownership, we don't seem to have the same obsession, which I am very happy about.
Absolutely.
But. I was very disappointed as well with that whole political opportunism. Well, not disappointed, I suppose it's largely to be expected by Donald Trump, but him jumping on the bandwagon to sort of try and further his own political ends. So
really
awful.
Really awful, dreadful man.
Really, really tasteless. And I'm just amazed that anybody... I know a lot of people are outraged by it, but I just thought... And I think President Obama was very dignified in his response to it.
Yes.
And you hope that people will respond to that. And I know there are sort of more liberal-leaning or left-leaning Republicans, but you'd hope that they would... you hope that...
They would see
they
that.
Will respond.
Yeah.
To him. It's just sort of such an awful thing. And I suppose that's the point, is that people hijacking it and trying to make it about fear and about hate and about... Well, defining whole groups as one thing.
Yeah.
He's suggesting to ban all Muslims entering America or people from certain countries entering America is very...
bizarre.
So hateful. Yeah, and so inflammatory as well, of course. I think that's what Obama was saying when he responded.
Yeah, that's the thing. It's so... Yeah. It's so baiting.
Mm.
So baiting.
Very baiting. Yeah, very baiting. Yeah, good word. Yes, it will be interesting to see how America responds in those terms. And I think, well, if anything, let's hope that people are more aware of homophobia and that they are able to talk about things, I think.
Yeah, and, you know, we can't just sort of go, oh, well, we're sorted now.
Yeah.
You know, I'm going to march this year at Pride, which is something I've never done before.
I mean, other people are just going to walk, Susie, but yeah, sure, put on your soldier's outfit if you want.
But I look so cute in it.
Yeah. Private Benjamin.
That's me.
Yeah. Yeah. So you're going to do the walk, aren't you? Yeah.
I am. And you know, because I think, oh.
Well, I'm saying this is that you are. I mean, I potentially will be. Mm-hmm. I have to explain to listeners. We invited listeners to join us, but that's when you thought it was on the 18th of June,
yeah,
which I am available
for. Yeah, it's actually the
25th. It's actually the 25th. And I currently have some engagements on that day. But... Susie, you're going to be there.
Yeah,
so
I'll
maybe
be there.
If people want to join you, you can
absolutely
send them a place. And if I can, I will try and come along with it.
Yeah, absolutely.
Otherwise, I'll just be there. No, I won't. I'll just be elsewhere. That's where I'll be. But I'll still be being gay. Don't worry, kids.
Still
wherever
being gay.
I may roam. Super gay.
Soups gays.
Soups gays. But yeah, so, well, I guess we'll talk more about that next week when it's nearer
yes,
time.
Yes, we will indeed.
Wonderful, wonderful. Well, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you for listening to Like Minded Friends. Please do join us again.
Join us again next week. And thank you for all your tweets and your reaching outs. We really appreciate it. And it's
yes,
always lovely to hear from you. So thank you very much. And we look forward to speaking to you.
Speaking in front of you next Wednesday.
Next Wednesday. Till then, have a great week. Bye.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Bye-bye. Bye-bye. Bye-bye.
How do you know if you're worrying too much? How can you mend a broken heart? Does peaking at school ruin you for life? I'm Susie Ruffle, a stand-up comedian and someone who has always experienced anxiety. And I've written a book, Am I Having Fun Now? Considering some of life's big questions. Featuring bonus insights from the likes of Charlene Douglas, Sarah Pascoe, Elizabeth Day, and Dolly Alderton. Am I Having Fun Now? Is out now in hardback, ebook, and audio.